At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Okay, serious question. What is a good time frame to use when you are trying to manage an entire economy? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 28th day of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The economic news of the day today isn't really about today. President Biden's big speech about his big plans for this economy is going to take years, maybe decades, to play out. That, of course, is the long-term news. Jay Powell, wrapping up the Federal Reserve's two-day meeting today, said this about getting back to full strength.
We've got a long ways to go. And also, it's going to be a different economy.
We'll call that the medium-term news. Closer to today, we'll get the next dose of data on consumer spending on Friday, and with it a sense of the economy, and in particular, spending on services and how it's all coming back. Marketplace's Mario Segarra made some calls to hear what people are looking for now and in the medium to long term.
So before we get too far into this, something you should know. On the show, we often talk about retail sales numbers. Those come out monthly and tell us mainly whether people are buying goods, which they've done a lot of during the pandemic. Dana Peterson is chief economist at the Conference Board.
Good spending was very strong. People bought cars, they bought appliances, they bought lawn furniture, they bought boats and RVs.
On Friday, though, we're getting consumer spending numbers, which is different. It's more heavily weighted towards services. Bars, restaurants, hair salons, amusement parks, theaters, call it the experience economy, which didn't do so well during the pandemic.
But as more people are vaccinated, and certainly as economies are reopening, that experiential spending will come back.
Friday's numbers will give us a sense of how much. Peterson says she's expecting the numbers to be very strong and to continue on that path through the summer and probably into next year. But Ori Heffitz, who teaches macroeconomics at Cornell, says it's hard to say how long any bump in spending might last. The numbers are a snapshot in time, of March specifically, when a lot of people were spending their stimulus checks.
I'm going to spend differently money I saved over many years than I'm going to say spend a Fed government check that I actually never counted on, and all of a sudden, surprise.
In other words, the way people are spending right now, because they've got that fat stimulus check and the sun's out and they got their vaccine and they're feeling hopeful, that's not necessarily going to last. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Speaking of fat stimulus checks and the sun being out and all that and the hope that it's going to last, allow me to introduce to you the topic of business inventories. The Census Bureau reported today that wholesale inventories are going up. Those are the businesses that supply retailers, stocking up ahead of the sun being out and the fat stimulus checks getting spent. Marketplace's Justin Ho has our inventory story today.
Wholesalers are basically the middle step in the retail supply chain. They buy goods from manufacturers that they're hoping to sell to retailers, says Tim Fiore with the Institute for Supply Management.
So they're speculating on the future. So wholesale inventory growth is absolutely an optimistic indicator.
Optimistic because wholesalers believe consumers are going to be spending more. And that's already starting to happen, says Wells Fargo senior economist Sarah House.
Products are just flying off the shelves as soon as retailers can get their hands on them.
House says that's a sign that the economy has plenty of room to grow.
Sales could be even better if we could actually get our hands on the supplies and products that consumers and businesses want.
House says some of those products are stuck in the supply chain right now because of the congestion that's been clogging up U.S. ports.
And so we have cargo that's sitting in ports waiting to be offloaded or waiting for a driver for its truck chassis. And so that's getting caught up in the inventory levels that we see.
So wholesalers are staying in closer contact with retailers to get a better idea of what they'll need, says Brian Yarbrough, consumer research analyst at Edward Jones.
A lot of wholesalers are trying to figure out ways to improve the supply chain, be more nimble, be quicker.
Yarbrough says wholesalers will ramp up inventory throughout the summer. But at the same time, he says businesses are thinking about the fall and winter and what happens when government relief aid wears off.
Okay, so demand's really good, but how much of that is demand that's going to stay and how much of that is more stimulus driven?
Yarbrough says wholesalers are likely to keep increasing their inventories, but at a pretty slow pace. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, a little deflated, you could say. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I'm not sure we needed an earnings report to know this, but Starbucks said in its most recent announcement that store traffic is still down from early last year when things were normal. Spending per visit, though, it's up so much that sales are back to normal, where they were when things were normal. And the company says some of that is thanks to an 18% bump in the number of people who signed up for its loyalty program in the past year. The 90-day active member rate, which is the preferred metric, I guess, for those loyalty programs, is now for Starbucks 23 million users in the United States. And just because why reinvent the wheel? McDonald's and Wendy's and White Castle and a bunch of other fast food places have piloted or have launched loyalty programs of their own, low these pandemic months. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab explains why.
It seems like everyone on social media has a hack for something, including how to get lots of freebies.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to my channel. It's my birthday!
That's YouTuber Lindsay Ray. Her goal in this video is to get as many birthday perks from loyalty programs as she can. She goes to Denny's for a free Grand Slam breakfast, Starbucks for a free iced matcha green tea latte, IHOP for even more pancakes, and on until she gets a free stomach ache.
I don't know if I can eat any more pancakes. This might be a problem.
People love deals and feeling like they've gamed the system, even though it's the system that's actually gaming them. Phyllis Rothschild at McKinsey says customers who use loyalty programs are twice as likely to return to a brand and spend more. And
they may actually become less price sensitive for my brand over time because they know that they're going to get rewards further down the line.
She says loyalty customers boost revenue about 15%. So for the company, a freebie really pays for itself and then some. Loyalty programs also give companies a lot of data. Joseph Nunes teaches marketing at USC's Marshall School of Business.
Who's buying what? When are they buying it? How old the person is? Where are they geographically located?
He says since the pandemic began, fast food chains have been increasingly competing with delivery apps for that valuable information. And that's a problem because those chains want direct access to customers to send them customized offers through push notifications.
And give them a coupon or an offering that hits them right when they're in the market for lunch.
Pretty soon they're buying gift cards and signing up for a Starbucks Visa card to get even more rewards. The hope is a little loyalty hooks customers for life. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
I don't think I've used my Starbucks card, honestly, more than twice, like in the past year. Could not tell you how much is on it. Anyway, David Brancaccio, who I don't know whether he goes to Starbucks or not, will tell you all about the day's business and economic news early on a weekday morning. Check it out. The economic policy acronym of the day today is SVOG. SVOG. That stands for Shuttered Venue Operators Grant, part of the relief bill that was passed back in December and which has, because the wheels of government grind slowly sometimes, just this week, it's gotten up and running. A very late but welcome lifeline for theaters and live event spaces and other arts venues that have had to pretty much shut down entirely for the past year. Toby Parks is one of the thousands of business owners applying for the SVOG grant. She runs a small concert venue out in Des Moines, Iowa, called XBK. Ms. Parks, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
So you got your grant application in this week, did you?
We absolutely did. We're so excited to be able to see some revenue coming through the pipeline now. So that's fantastic.
Tell me what that revenue is going to mean for you, because it has been for you and tens of thousands of other venue operators a long haul.
It really has. I mean, it's the difference between death and survival, you know, in terms of our industry. Without it, you know, it would have been very catastrophic. We've had no revenue for a year and we have, you know, nothing to work with. And so now, you know, with the SVOG applications in, and, you know, we know that the SBA is working diligently to get everybody funded. The hope is we can get back in there and we can compete again.
I'm going to show my naivete about the music industry, and this may sound pejorative, and I don't mean it to. Is Des Moines a go-to place for touring acts?
Well, we want it to be.
there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's really, you know, we're a connector city. You know, we're the spot that people go to from Minneapolis to Denver, or, you know, Chicago to Kansas City.
Yeah.
And really, you know, that's been one of the toughest things, too, with how things have been going with reopening with COVID, too, is that each market is opening in different ways, right? So,
right.
You know, in Iowa, we're completely open. In other states, it's, you know, they have different opening timelines, and that makes it really difficult for artists to be able to effectively route their tours, because, you know, it's not going to be lucrative for an artist to come all the way to Des Moines and just play Des Moines without being able to also play those other markets, those other larger markets that can really help fund their tour.
Right. So you've been open now for a number of weeks, right? You do one live show a week. What does it look like at XBK on a – they're all Friday nights. I checked your schedule. What does it look like on a Friday night when people come?
You know, people are just elated to be there, to be honest. You know, I mean, I think people have been so cooped up in their homes and haven't been able to get out. And so we really wanted to kind of catch up on our paces, too, of even just how to run the building again, you know. And so kind of dipping our toe in the water with, you know, very small audiences. The first week we started with 25. The next week we went up to, you know, 30. The week after that,
Is that people or percent?
People.
Oh, wow.
No, people.
Out of a 250-person house, right? Plus or minus?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, technically by, you know, Iowa standards, you know, we could be open and, you know, there's no capacity limits there anymore. But for us,
wow.
You know, we want to make sure that people come into our venue, that they feel safe, and to really just give this joy to people, because I can't tell you, like, how amazing it's felt coming in and the artists getting to perform for the first time in a year. Every artist has had a multiple song encore because people just don't want to go home. It's a really wonderful feeling to be back at it again.
I hate to bring you down from that great image, right, of the artistic high there, but let me ask you the business question. Are you making any money or are you taking a bath?
Right now, we are breaking even on the shows themselves. You know, we're not able to cover any of our overhead with these shows, but we're able to cover our staff costs and pay the artists a little bit. So, you know, the way that we look at it is, you know, we're going to either be closed or we can just break even and give people a little bit of joy and something to look forward to. So we opted to try and dip our toe in the water and go for the latter option.
Toby Parks, she is the owner, also the artistic director of a club in Des Moines, Iowa called XBK. Ms. Parks, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Coming up,
We want our people to be energized and hopeful.
Yeah, so do I. You know, so do I. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 164 today, and that's on the point scale, 0.4%, finished at 33,820. The NASDAQ slid down 39 points. That's more than a quarter percent there, 14,051. The S&P 500 peeled off 3 points. We call that basically flat, landed at 41.83. With Marielle's consumer spending story in mind, we turn now to some big retailers. Target, basically flat on the day. Walmart discounted 0.3%. Best Buy powered down 0.9%. Shall we snack a bit on those food chain loyalty programs Kristen was talking about? Yes, we shall. Starbucks poured off 3.2% today. McDonald's slimmed down 1%. Wendy's also basically flat. A lot of flat today. A lot of flat. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year T-note down 1.61%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Behind every successful business is a story. And some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We have talked a bit on the program, I think, about the bills and some new laws, too, that are happening in most, if not all, states to reform or restrict voting rights, which call it kind of depends on where you sit on the political spectrum, right? But even though we are talking state laws here, there's a whole lot of national money at play, both for and against. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that one from Washington.
There's been a fight over the right to vote throughout American history, says Michael Waldman, president of the Brennan Center for Justice.
It's gone into hyperdrive, though, in the last year, and that has animated this new wave of voting law proposals and restrictions in a way that none of us have seen before.
The Brennan Center is tracking at least 361 bills in 47 states that it says have restrictive provisions.
This is a massively powerful center of gravity now on the right. It has become a fundraising issue.
Republican groups are spending big on efforts to change voting laws in dozens of states, saying they are pushing for reforms, not restrictions. And it has been good for fundraising.
Our membership base is very encouraged that we are working in this space.
Jessica Anderson is the executive director of Heritage Action for America, which plans to spend $24 million over 2 years.
Spread out in eight, what we would consider targeted states. Two of them we've already begun our spending and grassroots work in, Georgia and Arizona.
The group is pushing for voter ID requirements, limits on absentee voting, and ending same-day voter registration. Anderson points to their successful campaign to help push the Georgia voter law over the finish line, which Heritage Action is now running ads nationwide to defend.
Heritage Action for America was proud to support Georgia's election reform.
On the left, groups like End Citizens United and the Let America Vote Fund have partnered with the National Democratic Redistricting Committee on a $30 million effort to fight the more restrictive bills and to support federal legislation to expand voting rights. But that's probably not all the money going into this. Jay Riestenberg is with the group Common Cause, which advocates for more accessible voting.
Well, the truth is we'll never really know because a lot of these groups do not disclose their spending or where their funding comes from. But I think we're well in the area of over $100 million on both sides.
And with so many bills moving through so many state houses, even more political cash is likely on the way. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
The theme of this economy right now, the short-term hope, I guess, is the better way to say that, is pent-up demand, doing things we haven't been able to do for more than a year. And for a whole lot of workers, that includes taking a vacation. A survey by the U.S. Travel Association shows almost two-thirds of Americans desperately, that's the word they use, need a vacation. The irony here is that Americans, at least the ones lucky enough to get paid time off, have historically been really, really, really bad at taking it, leaving on average half of their vacation days unused. But this summer, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino tells us, could be different.
As soon as Jennifer Temple had the chance, she was making plans for her post-vaccination life.
I literally got home from my first dose, and I slacked my boss, and I said, I just realized I can travel on May 8th. I did the calculation, and I'd really like to go.
After the Seattle communications professional figured out her password to those travel sites she hadn't used in over a year, she booked a trip to Houston in May to see her family, a jaunt to California wine country in June. Oh, and then there's that Brandi Carlile concert that was canceled last year that's now been rescheduled in August in Eastern Washington.
And beyond that, I mean, I really would like to get out to Hawaii, Belize, warm tropics are on my horizon. That's all I can think about right now.
Increasing vaccinations are letting loose a gusher of pent-up travel demand. And that could be tricky for employers to navigate, says John Dooney with the Society for Human Resource Management.
These requests will come kind of in a short time period. So I think that's a challenge companies may face.
Companies don't want workers building up huge amounts of PTO that they'll be liable for, but they also need to keep their businesses running. He says some employers have set limits on the number of people who can be out at the same time to try to stagger vacations.
I think some employers may also decide to shut down for all employees, and sometimes you might see that during the shutdown with holiday time.
But not all companies can afford to be super flexible right now. James Hendricks is a data scientist for a solar company in Houston. He canceled a family trip to Disney World in Orlando last November and hasn't taken more than a few days off all year. Now he's got a trip out west on his mind.
I would like to drive everybody out to see the redwoods and some of the other, I guess, more rare and interesting natural ecological things.
He has more than 2 weeks of time off banked, but it's not a good time to take off, partly because one of his colleagues died unexpectedly.
And we're having a hard time finding somebody to take over that role. Now there's just a lot more that needs to be done, and getting away, even for like taking a Friday off for a 3-day weekend, and we just don't have the people on hand to take care of it.
But giving employees a break could have benefits to productivity in the long run, says Sheila Ryan, who heads HR for Clear Capital Appraisal Services near Lake Tahoe. She knows workers are just burnt out.
Because I'm one of them, right?
She describes the current moment as the mud season. In her mountain town, the snow is literally starting to melt as the worst of the pandemic eases. It's a sign of sunny days ahead, but right now, it's still a slog.
It's nice to look forward to something. So we want people to do that. We want our people to be energized and hopeful.
And that's exactly what planning a vacation, or three or four, has done for Jennifer Temple in Seattle, who's been waiting to visit family for 18 months.
Getting to see my stepmom, getting to see my sister and my family, and hanging out, eating. It's just huge. I'm just so looking forward to seeing people.
This year, vacations mean a lot more than just the usual R&R. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Consumer spending numbers come out on Friday. Mentioned that up at the top of the program. And we're guessing there will have been a lot of it as we all get back to spending money on the things we used to spend money on in the before times. For Gail Harrell, she's one of the 10 people we've been following for our series about the American labor force called The United States of Work. That's traveling. She's a part-time cashier at a convenience store in Ashburn, Virginia. And she sent us this update.
I've been working. They work about 3 days a week, 5 to 6 hours a day. It's picking up again, you know, with COVID. The biggest thing we have at work now is some people coming in not wearing masks. But I did get my COVID, got both of them, Pfizer. So I feel comfortable. And just lately, I am making a few more plans. Last weekend, I flew to Greensboro, North Carolina to meet some friends for my birthday. We haven't really been together since COVID at all. I flew from Washington to Greensboro. I got a seat by myself going down, but the plane was so, you could smell the Clorox. You could almost eat off the floor. I think it's cleaner now than it was then before COVID. So I didn't feel uncomfortable and I didn't sit by anybody. So it was okay. And then we went thrift shopping and had fun, just fun. Of course, we didn't do anything last year, but I do have a few more plans this year. Matter of fact, we're going this weekend. It's called Lake Anna. It's in Virginia. We're going to celebrate somebody's birthday and mine too.
This final note on the way out today, which I somehow missed last week, but which is too good not to use anyway. New Belgium Brewing released a new beer last week for Earth Day, made only of ingredients you might find on a much warmer planet. It's called Torched Earth Ale. It's made of smoke-tainted water and dandelion weeds, drought-resistant millet, and buckwheat grains. Gross, but brilliant. All right, we're out of here, but here is your moment of economic context related to that final, I suppose, but also to the whole future health of this economy vibe that we started with. Goldman Sachs is out with a research note saying the reopening of the global economy is going to result in the biggest jump in demand for crude oil ever. And you know what comes with rising demand, yes? Goldman says oil is going to $80 a barrel. U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, 63 and change a barrel today. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Liana Squalace, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. They are, of course, the ones coming in, so the rest of us don't have to. Unless, right? I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.